I am very happy to have our next guest with us. He was communications director for the Republican National Committee from 2011 to 17, and its chief strategist from 2015 to 2017. He, of course, was the first White House press secretary under Donald Trump. Yes, he is with us, Sean Spicer. Sean, thank you so much for taking the time.
You bet, Steve. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. And your book, I believe, is coming out next month. It's called The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President.
That's right. It's actually out in terms of it's available for pre-order on both Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But it's going to be a pretty exciting month for me. It officially hits bookstands on July 24th. But, you know, the as you probably have seen many times before, the lead up to these things is quite itself a little venture.
Yeah, I know. And I know, I believe it was last week, you were recording the audio book for this project.
It was quite an experience. I spent just over 3 days in a studio
reading
my own book. And I'm not sure I knew what to expect, but it was definitely not anything close to it. It's a very surreal experience reading your own book that you, and for that matter, a book that I never knew that I was going to write or anticipated writing. And so it's saying it out loud is kind of different than either writing it itself or reading it through the draft. Something about speaking the word really puts it to life.
Yeah, it's true. And I can relate to this after 45 years in radio. And I've done a bunch of audio books as someone that didn't write the book, you know, and that was kind of strange, too. But to do your own book and then do the audio version is got to be a trip.
It really was. So I'm excited for it to come out. And when I left the White House, my intention wasn't to write a book. I had a bunch of business opportunities and other projects that had come my way.
I'm sure.
And I was doing a lot of speaking around the world. And what happened is the same kind of questions kept coming up where people would get up and say something to the effect of, I read a story where you thought the following. And I finally decided that instead of everybody having read some story in the New York Times or Politico or whatever about what I did, why I did it, and how I felt, that if I wanted to set the record straight, it was incumbent upon myself to actually sit down and tell my version of why I did what I did or why I thought what I did, you know, was in the background for it and how I actually felt when certain things happened. But, you know, it was a very interesting and introspective period for me to sit back and really think and have to put down to paper a lot of that rationale and thought and reasoning.
Yeah, it can't be easy. I can't even imagine. And there was so much going on and so much on your resume, so many stories to tell. So I can't wait to read this book.
I appreciate that.
I'm excited about it. We got to talk, otherwise I'll get a bunch of grief from people about that January 21st, the day following Trump's inauguration. And that whole thing with the inauguration crowd and the ceremony and blah, blah, blah. You since have talked about that. And I think it involves everything from Twitter to Facebook to everything, not just the size of the crowd physically there, right?
Yeah, that's right. And obviously I go through extensively in the book that whole day in terms of what was happening surrounding it, the process, the thoughts, et cetera. But in a nutshell, you know, the actual statement that I said was that there is not this is the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration in person or around the world. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind that thinking was that, as you can imagine, we were getting record reports of people watching it online. There were, you know, countless platforms, whether it's Periscope or Facebook or Twitter that
or television
watch. The live events aspect of so many platforms on the internet just didn't exist. You couldn't watch live events on Facebook or Twitter or so many other things that you can do now.
Yeah.
So it's almost and when you look, like CNN's own streaming record was 16.7 million people had watched, you know, had tuned into some part of it online. And there were countless websites that were reporting traffic that had never been seen before. And we felt pretty safe saying, The problem was is that I think everyone focused entirely on how many people were on the mall at
right.
that given moment.
I think that I write
a little bit about this, that we should have been more precise in hammering home that argument.
Yeah, and it didn't help, I guess, that they were showing, or you were showing, or the press room folks at the White House were showing the size of the crowds compared to Obama's. And, you know, I mean, what you were trying to say made sense, but it didn't help you to show those photos for people on the lawn, right?
Yeah, and again, I will say that I think we could have handled that better to make the point more succinctly.
As White House press secretary, and my producer and I have been to two briefings in the White House press room, which is always exciting. As White House press secretary, what would you do differently?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things. This is kind of the whole point of the book, is to go through a lot of this. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I think personally I would do differently, but then there's also structurally in terms of what staff we had and how we had it configured. So there's a lot of both personal and structural reforms that I think I would have made. And a lot of that I get into in the book.
What I got to ask you what you thought when Kellyanne Conway, shortly after all that, used the phrase alternative facts regarding the inauguration's attendance numbers. Did that surprise you? What did you think?
I mean, look, I think, again, there were so many times when, I mean, Kellyanne's point was sort of, you know, we were trying to make a point of audiences and different platforms and versus just people on the mall and comparing different, you know, statistics, if you will. So, you know, there was a lot of people totally comparing everyone, you know, number of bodies on the mall. And we were trying to, you know, try to count total number of eyeballs. I don't think the phrase was particularly helpful. But, you know, again, I think every time one of us opened our mouth at the White House, there was this intense desire to say, okay, see, you stepped over, you didn't say it perfectly, and so now we're gonna go after you. And that happened, you know, frankly, a bunch of times with myself. It happened with Kellyanne, where it was pretty clear what the intent of what we were trying to describe or say was. And I think the irony that I found so often was that reporters who, look, we all make mistakes.
Of course.
And I think the irony that I found was that all of these reporters who oftentimes have to, quote, update their stories or admit that they didn't talk to this person or they misquoted that person or they took something out of context, never have those kind of moments where everyone, you know, piles on them. And yet they seemingly want to do that entirely to everybody who is serving in this White House. Figure out that one little moment that you might not have been as precise or used the exact word that you should have.
Yeah.
And kind of pillar you, whereas when they make a mistake and you bring it up, they'll say, come on, it's like, let's not dwell on this. Like, stop being so petty. And it's their mistakes are viewed as one thing. Everyone else's mistakes are viewed quite differently.
Sean Spicer is with us, former White House press secretary, former director of the Republican National Committee. The book's coming out next month. I can't wait. You can pre-order it right now everywhere. I just saw the Rolling Stone story. This is pretty cool. It was headlined, Sean Spicer is ready to talk about it. I can't wait for this book, man. I'm telling you. You've actually talked in interviews, I believe, about your opinion about getting rid of the daily White House briefing. And my producer says it actually makes some sense. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, just to be clear, I don't think we should get rid of it. I just don't think it needs to be every day and on television. And I think that there's several of my predecessors from both sides of the aisle that agree with that, meaning this. The briefing itself takes hours of multiple people's time, staff-wise. So from early in the morning until that briefing goes off, several people, the press secretary, deputies, assistant press secretaries, other staff, you know, council members of the council's office, legislative affairs, domestic policy council, you name it, are part of a process to gather information and try to figure out you know, all of the answers to the questions that we think we're going to get.
Yeah.
And the question, and when you look at the results of it, which is multiple people asking the same question over and over again, not because they are looking to get more information or further a story, but rather to just have a clip that they can show in their own network or post to YouTube or tweet out or whatever it is. The question that I sort of posited is that the best use of time and resources? Is it good for the taxpayer? I don't think so. Is it good for the media? No, I don't think so. There are many questions and issues and announcements and policies that the staff and the media could be discussing or furthering or what have you, rather than hold up in a closed door office trying to figure out how to prepare for all of the questions that already everyone already knows, just so that all of these reporters can get a clip on TV.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I can see that.
I mean, the point, Steve, is I don't think it should go away entirely, believe me. But I also think that it could maybe happen twice a week. But the press office needs to be there all the time to answer questions, to put out announcements, to respond to inquiries. I get that. But the Department of Defense, I think, does one once a week. The State Department, I think, does theirs every other day. Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, every day. It's not a good use of staff time.
And in the past, even if they did pretty much every day, it wasn't always televised. But because of Trump and the whole situation and the, you know, it is. And I can understand where the cable networks are going with this, and it makes sense. But, yeah, what you say makes sense as well.
Right. So, and again, I think some people try to say that I want to abolish them, which is not accurate. I just don't know that they need to be every day. And you're right. It's like in the past, you know, they haven't always been carried, and there was not as robust attendance as there is now. And I think, you know, for a lot of obvious reasons, because the president is who he is.
Right.
But again, that goes back to the point, is that they're not necessarily coming to the briefing to get information. They're coming to the briefing to get a clip or a click for their outlet, which is not news. It's not that's a show. That's not an information gathering process.
How do you think Sarah Huckabee Sanders has been doing?
I think she's doing a fantastic job. She understands the nature of what the president wants. She has done a fantastic job of making sure she represents him to the American people and to the media accordingly. And so I think when it comes to, you know, articulating, you know, what the job of the press secretary is to speak for the principal when they aren't able to do it themselves. And I think Sarah has done a very, very solid job of doing that in a way that, while the press corps may not always like it, her job is to represent the president to the American people and to the press corps, you know, when he can't be there himself. So I think she's done a fantastic job.
Sean Spicer is with us. What about Trump's Twitter habit? I believe somewhere you were asked that question and had kind of an interesting answer about having to get used to his Twitter habit early on there. What was that like?
Well, you know, Steve, most principals, you know, that I've worked for in the past kind of call their communications or press team up and say, hey, what do you think if we put out a tweet about this? And here's what I think we should say. What do you think? Or can you draft something up? And it's a very different dynamic because President Trump's clearly the communicator in chief. He's the one driving the message. And so it's a very different dynamic. And it takes some getting used to for people like myself that are, you know, normally used to being the ones that drive the train for the principal.
Sure. Yeah. Let me just ask, since you've left the White House and the tweets in the last maybe 6 months or a year maybe have become more prevalent, do you think it hurts or helps the administration on some of this?
I think on balance, it's helpful to the president. It helps him speak directly to the American people. And there's frankly no question what he thinks. You're not going, well, is that a spokesperson? It's coming directly from the president of the United States, and I think that's a very positive thing. It's very real. It's very authentic.
Fascinating stuff. Sean Spicer, the book is The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President, out next month, but available for pre-orders all over that place. I hope you can join us again before the book's official release, so we can remind everyone that it's about to be out.
Love to. And thank you for having me. It's an honor.
It's an honor having you, Sean. Thank you so much, and we'll talk.
All righty. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.